Welcome to the Original Recipe Group Big Book Step Study. Broadcasting from Newcastle, PA, every Monday night from 7 to 8:30 p.m. Easter on Zoom.
I do have experience with this step, and I noticed there were a lot of newcomers in the room and on Zoom. So welcome to all of you. And you came at a great time. We're going to talk about sex. So if you're wondering, like, why is he mentioned sex three times already? This is just a part of the inventory where we look at our sex conduct, right? It's not really like, it usually doesn't get too graphic. It usually doesn't get, I'm not going to chase anybody out of the room. Nobody should be offended, but it can be a strange thing when you first come in. So I get that. And just bear with me. We'll get through it together. So one of the things I always like to mention, I just love it. It's something my sponsor told me. It's not going to help you with this particular step, but it kind of illustrates part of the reason why we do it. My sponsor pointed out, we do this inventory and there's three parts to it, right? Resentments, fear, and sex. So he pointed out to me that when Bill Wilson, when he writes about resentment, he says it's the number one offender. It kills more alcoholics than anything. Pretty strong language. He's laying down the gauntlet. You know what I mean? He's not messing around. When it comes to fear, he says it's an evil and corroding thread. The very fabric of our life is shot through with it. Again, not messing around. When it came to sex, he said, if we fall short of our chosen ideal and stumble, are we going to drink again? Some people tell us so, but we feel it's a have to. This is where Bill Wilson struggled. My sponsor pointed out the language and he said, listen to the humanity. You can like hear him struggling with the step as he's writing. I always love that because it puts it, he wrote it tonight. We read it tonight. We all have sex problems. We'd hardly be human if we didn't. That sentence meant a lot to me. I don't often quote the Big Book, but that particular sentence, because when I came in, I was afraid this was about just exposing me as a pervert or pointing out how ridiculous of a human being I am, right? And it had nothing to do with that. One of the first things my sponsor told me when we sat down for this work, trying to figure out if it's going to come across as off color or not, he said, I'm just going to say it, he said, you know, if you like to like tie up your girlfriend or whatever, and she's on board and, you know, you hang her from the chandelier, if you guys are both okay with that, that's not a problem. That's not something that you have to look at. As long as you're two consenting adults and you enjoy the same things, that's fine. He said, if one of you likes it and the other one's forcing the hand, that's a different story. So that kind of sets the tone for like, it wasn't about like, oh, what kind of perverted stuff do you like to do, or do you stick to a biblical sense of sexual intercourse, or do you go rogue? Or it really has nothing to do with that. It has more to do with my conduct and how it's, I said it once before, it's not what you do in bed, it's what you do to get there. That's really what we're looking at. Is sex is just another part of myself that that blocks me off from God, and that's really the reason for doing this work, right? So they teach us that we found the great reality deep down within us, that we tapped into an unsuspected inner resource. They teach us that God's within us. So everywhere you go, you're taking God with you, no matter what you do. It's kind of like that Thich Nhat Hanh quote, everywhere you go, there you are. Everywhere you go, there God is. You know, you got to remember that too. So it said it tonight. It said, we hope you're convinced now that God can remove whatever self-will has blocked you off from him. So this is just another part of my self-will that'll block me off from God if I allow it to. What I've realized over the years is that my drinking just came down to it's really simple. It's I don't feel good and I want to. I'm a person who doesn't know how to feel good naturally, so I try to do it chemically, whether that's alcohol, drugs, gambling, like the endorphin rush from gambling or sexual intercourse. It doesn't matter to me. If it'll make me feel good, even for a little bit, I'll do it. I don't care what it is. I just give it to me. I just want to feel good. That's what I've been crying out my whole life. That's the first 38 years of my life where all just me saying, please, somebody help me. I don't know what I'm doing. I need to feel good. So I drank my face off. I slept with anybody who was willing. I ran from my fears. I did all sorts of absurd things because of fear. But when it came to the sex part, I've always had this thing and this is just for me. I'm the youngest of five. I'm the runt of the litter. I've always been trying to prove my worth. You know what I mean? I was always getting kicked around, always brushed aside, always like, yeah, kid, go away, go away. I was always trying to prove what a man I was. That was my whole shtick, is that I wanted to prove. You can't really tell on Zoom, and I'm wearing a sweatshirt, but I'm kind of built like Shaggy from Scooby-Doo. If you see me in person, that's kind of what I look like. You're Zoinks, Jinkies, that's me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not the Marlboro man. I'm not. So I've always set out to try to prove that I was a man, that I was a real man. I wanted to be the Marlboro man, you know? But the reality is, I've always been a scared little boy. And that holds true today. That's why I do this work over and over again. That's why I loop through 10, 11, and 12, is because I'm a scared little boy. I always loved what Jack the Marine used to say, is I don't get afraid, I am afraid. And if I allow myself to sit in fear long enough, then I will act out, and I will act out sexually. I'll try to find a woman. I've always had this idea in my head that if I could just get a woman to stand next to me long enough, it's like validating me, you know, like, I can't be that bad if this woman's willing to spend time with me. Like, how bad could I really be? Or what? To me, it was like proving myself to the world. And that's all I was really after. I mean, the simple truth is, I've been with some with women that I honestly didn't even like on a fundamental level. Like, just didn't enjoy them, didn't think they were good people, didn't think they were a good match, whatever the case may be. But I went with them anyways, because I'm just trying to fill a missing puzzle piece. I don't care what it looks like, you know. I'm just trying to do whatever I can to be a normal little boy. And the reality is that I was never meant to be that normal little boy. So when I started doing this work, my sponsor sat me down. He had this long talk with me about some of the stuff that I just told you about. And he sort of set my mind at ease a little bit. He got me to the point where I could just, he talked to me about just what we're after, you know, and just setting the tone for, like, don't, you know, you don't have to go into all your little kinks or aberrations. You just talk about your conduct. So what that means is, and let me just take a look at the book here, right? So we reviewed our conduct over the years. Where had we been selfish? I'm going to be honest with you, I didn't think there was a way to be unselfish in sexual activity. Like, up until, I don't know, maybe 2 decades ago when I did the work, I really didn't see a way that it wouldn't be selfish. I was always playing man to man, if you know what I mean. I didn't get that. Where had I been dishonest? I was dishonest all over the map with this thing. There's a great line. It's an old movie. They remade it, but there was a movie called About Last Night, where this guy, Jim Belushi's playing the part, and he's approaching this woman for the first time, and she goes, "What do you do?" And he doesn't want to say that I think he was like he loaded trucks for a living or something. He didn't want to say that, so he said, "Me, I'm a professional boxer." And he goes, "You know much about the fight game?" And she goes, "No." And he goes, "I'm the heavyweight champion of the world." That's me. That's who I am. That's the kind of thing I'll tell you. If I think I can get away with it, I will tell you. I'll give you the whopper. I'll go right for the big guns. You know, I always found that amusing, because that's exactly what I would do if somebody told me that they didn't know anything about fighting. So where was I dishonest? I was always dishonest. I don't think I've been dishonest since I was a little kid. I've always been afraid that you'll see the real me. And I always thought that if you saw the real me, you couldn't possibly like me. And I didn't realize until I did this work that that has everything to do with my self-esteem. And the resentment part, you hear a lot about self-esteem, should be in this part too. My self-esteem was at an all-time low, and I was trying to prove that it wasn't. That's where you get that, like, I have a low self-esteem, but I think about myself all the time, that type of thing. That's the dichotomy there. That's what's going on, is that I have low self-esteem. I just don't want you to find out. You know what I mean? So I'll lie, and I'll do all sorts of absurd things because I don't think anyone would want to be with me. Because I honestly didn't want to be with me. If you don't want to spend time with yourself, you're going to believe that nobody else wants to spend time with you either. Where was I inconsiderate? I honestly never took people's feelings into consideration. None but my own. I was really out to, like I said, I just wanted to feel good. It wasn't really even like just like sexual. It wasn't, I just wanted to feel good. Sex felt good. That's the only reason why it was in play. You know, like, if it didn't feel good, I wouldn't do it. Or if it was more of a chore, I wouldn't have bothered with it. But the reality is, it was something that I could try to do to make myself feel better. So these are all things that I learned doing the steps. I didn't know that coming into this, not even a little bit. It seems so obvious to me now that I have a hard time remembering back to a time when I didn't know that. But that's the truth of the matter, is that I was just trying to prove myself to be something that I wasn't. When I sat down to do this work, where had I been inconsiderate? There's a story that I always tell. It always pulls on my heartstrings. It always makes me want to cry. So I apologize in advance if it does make me blabber a little bit. There was it just kills me. I always see this little kid's face. So there was a woman that I got involved with. She honestly, she was beautiful. She was such a beautiful, beautiful woman. She was like right out of the pages of a magazine. She was way over my pay grade. I don't know what she was seeing in me. Like, because again, Shaggy from Scooby-Doo, it's like Shaggy got, not Velma, who's the other one? Who's the good-looking Scooby-Doo girl? It's like I scored Daphne, but I didn't get it. But we did not get along. We were like oil and vinegar. We just couldn't mix. It was terrible. Like, I didn't like being with her. I didn't like myself when I was around her. But the thing is, she had this little boy. She had, not from me, another from a previous relationship. And I liked him a lot. He was great. He used to look up at me with these big blue eyes. He wanted a dad so bad. And I wanted to fill it for him. I wanted to fill that void. I wanted to show him how to play with footballs and play with Tonka trucks and do all this. I wanted it. I wanted that job. So I stuck around because I liked playing with him. It's funny, he used to go to bed at like 8, and she would put him in bed and we'd watch a movie or whatever we were going to do. But every time he went to bed, I felt the sense of dread. Like, she would walk him into the bedroom and I'd be like, oh, it was like George Costanza walking up the stairs for all those Seinfeld fans out there. I just felt a sense of dread when it was going to be just me and her after that. So the reason why I tell you that, and the reason why, so this little kid was on my sex inventory. And I say that, it sounds weird, I know, but the reality is, I stuck around for this kid. I thought I was being chivalrous. This is my sex conduct. I stayed with his mother and I had a sexual relationship with his mother just so that I could spend time with him. And the reality is, I thought, I honest to God, I thought I had myself convinced, the delusion that had to be smashed was that I was being chivalrous. That I was being a stand-up guy. Every boy needs a father. I'm doing an important. This is solid work. I would have called that God's work. So, and maybe some of you are thinking like, yeah, that seems like a pretty good. It's not, because the reality is, I knew that I was never going to be with the woman. I knew we weren't going to make it. And when I left him too. When I eventually did leave, I should have left after a month. I left after like 6, I think, something like that. He didn't get it. He didn't understand. All of a sudden, I wasn't there anymore, and I hurt that kid. Like, the one kid I loved in that relationship, and including myself, out of the three of us, me, her, and him, he was the only one that I had any love for, and I broke his heart. And I've been doing that my whole life to people. I always, always, always turn my back on the people who love me because I want to win over the people who don't. It's a shame that I had this sixth sense of how the world was supposed to work, but. The truth is, when I was doing the turnarounds and I was looking at that, and I saw how just selfish it was for me to inject myself into his life, get him, I was pulling him closer and closer. All those months, I wasn't pushing him away. I was pulling him closer. I get it. I don't want to look back and morbid remorse or morbid reflection. I can't help but just think, well, what's wrong with me? Why can't I ever see like the right thing to do? And the reason why I couldn't see the right thing to do is because I didn't have God in my life, because self-will was blocking me off from God. And that's what this work did for me. And so I had to look at things like that, see that inconsiderateness. Whom had I hurt? Man, I hurt that kid. I hurt her. I hurt myself sticking around in that relationship. Sorry, did we end just so? I always get a kick out of this. Did we unjustifiably arouse jealousy, suspicion, bitterness? I don't get a kick out of that because I never did it. I did it all the time. I used to get on the phone with with like I like TK would call me up and go, "Hey, you want to go out tonight? We're gonna head out at like 10 o'clock." And I go, "All right, sounds good. I'll see you there." And then after he hung up, I'd be like, "Okay, sweetie. All right, I'll talk to you soon, hon." And then because my girlfriend would be listening, to the one side of the conversation. So after he's gone, I can start calling him sweet cakes and buttercup and whatever else I want to arouse jealousy, suspicion, and bitterness. I did that on more than one occasion. What I get a kick out of is that he says, "Did we unjustifiably?" I would really, if anybody has a justifiable time when they could arouse jealousy, suspicion, or bitterness, please hit me up in the comments after this. I really want to hear about it because I can't for the life of me imagine when that would be justifiable. But where were we at fault and what should we have done and said? I was at fault that I allowed myself to manage my own life. It goes right back to what I learned in the resentment part is that my life is unmanageable, not because I drink. My life is unmanageable because I'm the one managing it. And the way that I manage things is I throw alcohol at it, I throw sex at it, I throw gambling at it, I throw whatever I can at all my problems to make them kind of go away, to make them feel less painful for me. And that's the selfishness of it, is I just want my pain to go away. And I'm willing to hurt people if I have to make my pain go away. And I could never really see that. So I'm looking at my timer real quick. So I have to wrap this up. I had to look at all this stuff, and I hope for the newcomer, you're listening to this and you're thinking like, why the hell is he talking about this kid? What the hell is going on? That's exactly what I want, because that's what I'm talking about. It's really not about sexual acts. It's about your sex conduct. How I behaved around that kid was my sex conduct. It was driven by sex. It was a sexual relationship. It morphed into something more, but I shouldn't have been there. I was someplace where I shouldn't have been. And I'll tell you one more quick little story, and then I'll shut up and listen to everybody echo while TK tries to figure out his microphone. There was a this is how this is kind of how screwed up I get. I was dating this girl. She was great. She was just a great kid. She was nothing wrong with her at all. She was a wonderful person. She still is. I shouldn't talk about her in the past. I don't see her that much anymore, but wonderful girl. Nothing wrong with her. Make a fine wife for somebody someday. Really good. I just wasn't feeling that spark, like I wasn't feeling any like real romantic connection. So I knew I kind of had to finish. I needed to end this. And I remember I was talking to my buddy Butch, who was very blunt all the time. But I was telling him about it, and he was like, "You're not doing her any effing favors. You cut her loose." And because what I had told him was, I said, "Listen, the holidays are coming up. I don't want to be that guy. I'm not going to dump her. I want to give her the pleasure of sitting beneath a tree with old Sean Shaggy Scooby-Doo here. I don't want to deny her that joy of the Christmas spirit." So that's what I was telling him, is I was going to wait till after the holidays to break it off with her. He told me not to. And then I was talking to my buddy Alan, because I'm an alcoholic through and through. You give me an opinion that I don't like, I go for a second opinion. I go looking for another. I'm looking for the person who's going to agree with me. So I'm on the phone with my buddy Alan, and I told him about it. I said, "Yeah." He's like, "How's that girl doing?" I said, "I don't really feel a spark. It's not really happening. I think I'm going to break it off." He's more passive than Butch, so he says, "Oh yeah, I get you. I hear you." So I'm telling him all that, and all of a sudden the phone beeps. This is back with the call waiting. I go, "Listen, dude, I'll see you at the meet." I was going to see him at a meeting, at a noontime meeting, a couple of minutes. So I said, "I got to take this call. It's her. I'm gonna let me go." I click over, and it's her, and she says, "Hey, listen, I'm not really feeling it. I don't feel that spot. I wish there was, God in my life. Hallelujah, the Lord has risen. Me too." We're all excited. Like, "Me too. I feel the same way. I can't believe you said that. I was just talking to someone about happy as a clam. So good. Like, God's in my life. Everything is going well. I'm not managing anything." Go to the meeting. I see my buddy Alan's outside smoking a butt. And he goes, "Hey, how'd it go with the girl?" And I go, "Oh, listen to this. She broke up with," and right about there it happened. Something clicked in my brain. She broke up with me. I'm a catch. What? Why did she break up with me? Wait a second. What's going? She didn't feel my spark? Hold on. I swear to God, I was going to set off to win back the girl I didn't want to begin with. I was planning on how to get her back into my life, the girl that I wanted to break up with so bad that I was talking to everybody like the town crier on how I should do it. This is, if you're wondering what that has to do with sex, this is the alcoholic mind with regard to the opposite, with the fair of sex. Like, this is what I do. I love that noise, by the way. That music is my favorite. I would have talked for another 10 minutes to hear it again, but I'm going to shut up there. I hope that made some sense. It didn't make a lot of sense to me at the time or now, but I hope you can see why this work is so important. Answering those questions and going through all my conduct, I could see again and again and again, I'm always doing Sean's will, Sean's will, Sean's will. And I had to start finding God's will. So hopefully that made sense. TK, thank you for asking me, brother. It was great to be here. Great to see you all. And I look forward to hearing what you have to say.